it's not good for us to be the center of attention in our own world. It's not good for our heart to you know, think more highly of ourselves than we ought. It's not good for our mind when we walk into a room that we assume that, like, we're the star of the show, or we choose the seat of honor.
The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Hello, you're listening to Premier Christian Radio. I'm Sam Hales, editor of Premier Christianity Magazine, and you've joined us for The Profile, where we sit down with a different Christian leader every week and hear something of their life story. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week is Pat Barrett. He is a worship leader and writer of some of the church's biggest songs, including Build My Life, Good, Good Father, and Elevation's Grammy-nominated hit, Praise. Pat's latest song is Praise the Lord Forever, and he joins me right now ahead of his appearance at this year's Big Church Festival. Pat, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is great. What an intro. Excellent intro. You killed that.
I said a thing.
No, that was inspiring.
Love it. Well, I mean, if the intro was good, wait until we get going, Pat. I mean, goodness. Yeah, I know, right? The only way is up. Here we go. So let's start at the beginning. I understand you grew up as a pastor's kid. Tell me a bit about that. Was that a broadly positive experience for you?
Yeah, it really was. Like, I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, a suburb of the city. And I from my earliest memories as a kid, like, I remember just being in church. And Which was for me an amazing experience. My parents modeled what discipleship to Jesus looked like. I also saw firsthand, you know, how wild it is to be a pastor at a church and to, like, you know, be one of the shepherds of a community of faith and all the craziness that goes with that, like, vocationally, but also relationally. And then I grew up, you know, with a really positive church experience. But for myself, like, I also remember when I made the decision as a teenager where my parents' faith became my own. And it wasn't, you know, faith and Jesus wasn't a decision that I was a tag along to via my parents. It was my own choice, my own yes to Jesus. And I haven't looked back since. I've wondered what was going on in life since, like we all do. But, you know, that was a really, growing up, it was so formative for me. So music and not just music, but the language of faith and surrender and openness to God was such a huge part of my life. I always loved music, and I write so many different types of songs. I just can't get away from that sound and that feeling where language can help unlock a devout yes in your heart. And because I had so many songs do that for me. So it's wild now as I've spent most of my time writing songs that some of them have been able to do that for other people. And gosh, I just love it. Yeah, I can't. It's such a take. Like, I think I don't know what my life would have looked like had I not been so formed, not just with faith, but with melody and music in that same space. And it's just really changed my life.
Yeah. So tell me more about those songs that you were singing, I guess, as a teenager. And you talk about faith becoming your own. Were there particular songs that helped faith become?
Were there songs from your island? I mean, Delirious and, you know, Tim and Matt.
Like, all, Matt Redman.
Yeah. Like, they just, so there was that music that was just so, I mean, it felt like just a breath of fresh air to our world. And then there were also, there were the writers over here that I could, like, Chris Tomlin was the soundtrack to my 18-year-old, you know, 18-year-old faith. Like, the Passion Movement, so many songs coming from, you know, Hillsong United a little later after that. Like, I've just been so, like, I now have memories associated with so many of those songs. Like, oh, I was, you know, I was leading at Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Do you have FCA in England?
I don't.
No, so it's just like a campus ministry at schools. Like, I was leading worship at one of our campus ministries of our high school. And those songs, those were the songs that I led every week.
Yeah. So around the time that faith was becoming your own, you were also starting to lead worship. Is that right?
Yeah. It was very like early on. I started playing drums at a neighboring church's like youth band. And there's a reason why I'm not playing drums still today. You know, context clues there. But I was probably like 14, 15 when a group of us just really had our heart changed by the Lord. And we decided to start writing music together and leading at our, leading at like their neighboring church. So we used to do a lot of like, we'd go out to these like neighboring high schools around us and we'd have these big like unity kind of like worship. Let's all worship together. Times that we help facilitate. So like early on, we just had, there's a drive in me and my friend group, which I can look back and man, how important it was for me to have people around me that were my community, but also like were aimed in the same direction. So my lifelong friends are still from that time. I can remember when, you know, those songs of faith and made their way into our friend groups. And we were kind of wild. We were just like no rules, teenagers. I think the adults around us too were like, what's going on with these kids? Like you saw like a mini kind of revival of sorts in our high school with friends coming to faith. And it wasn't just music, but music was a huge part of that. And singing our own songs. And so it wasn't, you know, I feel like nowadays when people are like, oh, that's when you started leading worship, it feels very official. Back in the day for us, it was like guerrilla theater or something. It was just like, who's got a djembe? Who's got a guitar? Meet outside the lawn. It was so like grassroots. Like it didn't, none of it felt official. And I often wonder, you didn't ask this, but I'm curious, like if in today's, the norm for today is you're leading worship, and there's a camera in front of you and there's, you know, you know, in your mind, this is going to be replayed for other people some other time. Like, I don't know if that would encourage me or discourage me, to be honest, because so many of those like early years of leading worship and failing and didn't sound great, didn't look great. But that's not the point. Like formation and discipleship, like no one's allowed to develop anymore. You know, it's like you're ready for a camera. It was just there's a whole other element now that wasn't a part of the early days for me.
And I suppose that's partly what social media has done. You're right. You know, even just 20, 30 years ago, you wouldn't have a broadcast quality camera in your pocket. You're getting it out to show everyone the music. You'd have to quietly get on with it. And then maybe in time, someone else, perhaps with a bit more responsibility or a bit more media understanding, would pick you up and help you with those things. Whereas now, right, you know, today's young people, for better or worse, can put their stuff out there and start promoting themselves. And it's an interesting question, isn't it, for us as Christians? On the one hand, you're sort of called to humility. And on the other hand, you have these amazing tools to put yourself out there. Has that ever been a bit of a wrestle for you in terms of, you know, if Jesus worship leader, how much time would he spend marketing himself?
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, this opens up a whole nother can of worms. I think, you know, we are encouraged by that medium to present the best version of ourselves. And even, this is like the paradox of it, even the people that would be like, well, I'm going to put myself out there, you know, which I think there's really cool things about this. Like, I'm going, the ladies, like, I'm going no makeup. I'm doing this. But but it's still via a medium to garner likes and followers and attention, all that stuff. I guess my point in bringing it up was, I'm not like hating on that necessarily. I am saying, I hope we haven't lost the space that is away from viewership and the parts of the most important parts of life that are never caught in a camera, or the moments where you're struggling in faith to find out you have mentors and you have leaders and you have a community that helps you along the way. Like those are camera shy moments. So I guess what I hope the ratio is just, you know, as society like corrects and then swings back real hard to correct itself, like too much at times, like maybe the ratio is like for every minute that you're in front of a camera, hopefully there's 99 that you're not, and you're not thinking about that, and you're not leveraging faith for only your own career. Because Jesus had a lot to say about things being done in secret. It's good for us. It's not good for us to be the center of attention in our own world. It's not good for our heart to you know, think more highly of ourselves than we ought. It's not good for our mind when we walk into a room that we assume that like we're the star of the show, or we choose the seat of honor. Like, you know what I mean? There's some really practical things that Jesus talked about that was like, hey, if you practice some of these things, your mind won't default to that. To me, 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 me. What am I doing? What am I building? What am I? So,
yeah,
I want that for my kids. I'm saying that as a dad. Like, I want them to be in spaces where they can grow and they can try and they can fail and they can get up and lift themselves up and do it again and learn to hear the voice of the Lord and get it right and get it wrong. And in all of it, you know, still feel the Spirit leading in their life, outside of the eyes of others, you know.
It's actually encouraging to hear people like yourself just being honest and wrestling with it. That's half the issue for people. I think it's more concerning where you feel like people just aren't aware that these things are difficult. There is a tension. That's almost more worrying.
Yeah, of course.
It's like, well, at least we're having the conversation. At least we're bringing it out into the open and saying, yeah, these are things we need to think about as the church together. And it's not about one individual. It's actually about the culture that we're all creating, isn't it?
Yeah, I started to, I'm working on an album right now. And one of the first songs for it is called, the first songs I started writing towards it, where I was like, I can't imagine an album without the song. It's called My Father's Business. And it was, I had an original version that was a lot more cutting and probably too too critical. But the chorus is, God forgive us for the times we called it praise, but it was show business. The times we used your name, but you were not in it. You know, Holy Spirit, lead us back to you. Burn in us. Fan the flames of holiness and true repentance. Purify our hearts to do our Father's business. You know, it's almost like, because what we're talking about in life, we're talking about the word business is a really interesting word that Jesus would have used. And, you know, I don't think we have to be naive and look around and realize like, okay, there's like got to be like ways to help sustain and share your music, and like there's a business aspect to it that I think is important to talk about. I think sometimes we feel weird talking about it because it feels like it undermines, and a lot of times, the mission and the, you know, the values that we're trying to share with the world. And sometimes they need to be called out, you know. I think there are also, when Jesus talked about it, it was like there is a higher aim. Sometimes we aim too low. And our highest aim is building our own thing, our own name, our own brand, our own church, our own, you know, music career, whatever. And when we aim too low, we miss out on the richness of life. And we just swing open the door to all these weird things. But if we just aim a little bit higher, you know, Jesus didn't say business was bad. He just said there's a better business to be a part of, you know? And I don't know. I find that really hopeful. And I think about that a lot, not just with writing music, but with sharing it. And I think it's really important to share the things that you care about. We're kind of created that way to do it. I think it's also really important to withhold speaking at times. When you don't have anything to say, don't just fill the world with stuff, you know?
I guess it's just from hearing you share that and reading some other things that happened recently that there is a grappling with these issues. I mean, I think of just something that Corey Asbury said recently. You know, he said, scripture says, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, yet we hire entire promo teams to film us and tell the world how great we are. Now, I don't know if that's a bit of an exaggeration, but again, like he, like you, as someone who's written some very well-known, well-sung worship songs, certainly known for Reckless Love. And again, he's saying, like, actually, some of this stuff is a struggle with culture around, even around Christian music. And we have to be honest and have the conversation. Did you get the sense that actually, you know, because there's a lot of critics of Christian music who say, you know, people aren't wrestling with this stuff. It sounds like you are.
Yeah, I don't know someone who's not. And it's not about the music side. I think it's more, this is what I'm curious about. I don't want to project on anybody else. Like, just look at my own life. The practicing of the faith that we adhere to is really simple and really difficult. And when I read the Sermon on the Mount, and some like the most practical, I know we usually go like societal, or we take these humongous issues and with politics and with, you know, social issues, like all these things, we go like meta with it, right? And when you read the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus does the opposite. And it's almost like he addresses the root reflexes that we live through our whole life. Like there's a reason why he says, turn the other cheek, because no one does that naturally. Kids don't do that naturally. You have to learn that. That's a mindset you have to practice your way into. Someone asked for your shirt, you give them your jacket as well. Like, no one naturally, maybe you have like a kid that's like has a bend towards generosity or whatever, but no one's just like, how can I give everything I own away today? Like, you have to practice that. You practice your way into generosity. And I think when you intentionally, so I'm saying that because when you're used to deferring yourself, you know, you're letting yourself die daily, you're deferring to generosity, like my time can go other places. You're not as self-centered. Like, you're more apt to live, you can be in the world and not of it in a much more non-affected way. It doesn't mean you're invincible to some of those influence, but you know what I mean? Like, you have some of the tools and the skill sets that help prep you for certain spaces. Now, I mean, consider that. Like, if you're praying and no one knows you're praying, you're spending so much time away from someone seeing your spiritual activity. Like, the lion's share of your time looks like that. Then moments like this don't feel as like, you're not as impacted by it negatively or positively, because this isn't the majority of my life. My faith is lived most often in private, and which I think is really important. And there's a medicine in that, I think, that we don't like. And when you're often not taking, again, you know, you don't take the highest seat. You're not showing favoritism to people, like, oh, I'm talking to you, but someone more important just walked in. So I'm like talking to you, but looking over your shoulder because I want theirs. When you're used to just like cutting that off, like nipping that in the bud, then some of the other bigger things, I'm not saying they all solve themselves, but I am saying you have the tools to not be as like thrown, you know, because that's not where the majority of your attention is going. And I think that's a really hopeful thing for people, for artists who are like, well, what do I do if I'm trying to share my music? Well, you write the songs that you feel like God is giving you, like if these songs have helped you, like share it and feel awesome about sharing it. And you'll know, you will literally know when you cross a line that feels icky to you. And you can decide. I don't mean like the classic, like I'm getting the ick. I just mean like if you ever feel like I just shared that in a way that it didn't feel, I don't know, God honoring, didn't feel like I was trusting God. It feels like I was, I think you can find your own voice in trying to be transparent with your life in that way too. I think there's a work that you could do there is my point. But most of the people I know, the vast majority are having this conversation regularly. And I think it's really important and beautiful.
Well, I'd love to chat a bit more about some of the songs you are best known for. I mentioned at the beginning, Good Father, Build My Life. I wonder though, if I were to ask, you know, what song or songs are you most proud of? Are they the ones that have traveled and found kind of international audiences, or are they actually the ones that don't roll off the tongue so easy? You know, what work really stands out for you?
What a great way to phrase that. I made a decision a long time ago that once like I was a part of writing a song and I shared it, I just let it be out of my hands. And I can't control whether someone likes it or shares it or what, you know? So, because if I don't do that, it'll just drive you crazy. You know what I mean? Like, so my rule has always been, I'll only share a song if it's helped, if it's like actually helped me. And I've realized that if it's helped me, I'm more excited to share it. And I'm less attached to the outcome in a really like healthy way. So, gosh, I love singing Good Father, Build My Life. I love those. But I also love singing the songs that were really special to Meg and I that no one, they're not necessarily like Sunday morning lift your hand songs. They were like songs where we were, there's a song called Slow and Steady about we were moving houses. And it felt like a big uprooting for us, even though we didn't like move states or anything. It wasn't like, from the outside, it seemed really small, but to us, it felt really big. It was a step of faith as a family. So it's like I needed a song for that. A song that felt like stepping out in faith when you don't feel ready. And, you know, there's no guarantees on the other end. It's going to be what you thought, but you're trusting God along the way. Like those songs mean a lot to me. And they're the ones that, you know, I like that. They don't roll off the tongue for people. But for me, they do,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So I like them all.
And the songs, that those two in particular, Good Father and Build My Life, which, you know, let the record reflect, are absolutely outstanding songs. There's no two ways about them. But do you ever wonder, like, what is it that makes those songs fly? Because I talk to some screenwriters and they say, like, it's genuinely just a God thing. Like, God breathed on that song in that moment. I talk to other people and they say, well, my record label very kindly gave me $1 million to put behind that song. Matt, well, singing it. But, you know, do you ever sort of think, like, what is it about those songs that really do go incredibly far and wide? You know, are they saying something in particular to the church that we as Christians need to hear in that moment? How do you kind of explain it?
If you would have asked me this 10 years ago, I would have probably used really spiritual language. And now, which I guess I just didn't have the perspective that felt healthy, because if I use language like, oh, God breathed on that song, that means like, oh, because it's popular, it's God breathed. You know, like I had to like, there's certain terms I had to actually like separate, because God breathes on things all the time that we never see. And to equate favor or blessing or, you know, the miraculous breath of God being in creativity, and it's only given that if it has reach, I think it's the wrong way of looking at it, because there are plenty of songs that are very popular with a very antithetical message to Jesus and his kingdom,
yep,
that are very popular. So are those God breathed because they have, you know what I mean? So I think what it's done for me is that I've taken a look at some of those words. And I realized like, oh, there's certain things that I've over spiritualized, And there's other things that I've under-spiritualized. And I think that's why when you ask, like, oh, are these, what songs are you most proud of? I'm really proud of the songs that felt like it took a toll to write. And I can look on them and say, like, I was honestly singing. Because something reaching and going, that's like, I had nothing to do with that, you know? But the songs that felt like, gosh, I struggled for a year to find the lyric for that that felt really true, and I didn't let up. Like, I was stubborn about it. And I grew as a writer, and I grew, you know, I leaned in. And those are the songs that I'm the most, I think, the most proud of. And I feel, and again, it allows me to go like, okay, God, like at the end of the day, if I say I want something to be an offering, you get to decide what you do with the offering. And which could mean I do a bunch of songs, no one cares about the songs, and your boy's got to get another job. Here, that option is on the table. And regardless of what, if I have to get a job to make, you know, ends meet, music and worship isn't going anywhere in my life. I feel very fortunate that there's been like a, you know, the Venn diagram was like music and career there's been a path there. But I know a lot of people that it hasn't been that same way, and they still are writing incredible songs. And their devotion to God isn't going anywhere just because, you know, the career side of their music isn't doing that. Like, I don't want, like, there's extreme dignity and honor there that I don't want to just, like, pass up because, like, oh, your songs haven't reached. They must, you know, God, I guess God didn't breathe on that one. It's like, well, no. I think, you know, what a beautiful gift that he's given all of us to, in our unique, with the unique cards that we've been dealt, use those parts of our lives to give glory and honor to God, whether someone sees it or not. You know, I think that's beautiful. And the only thing I can say about songs, like, why did they reach? I was like, I do not know. And the songs where I'm like, oh, I bet this will be one, did it. And the songs that, like, I took originally I took Good Good Father off the track listing for the album originally for the House Fires record, because, like, it wasn't the best version of it that we'd ever done. You know, there are other moments that felt like, oh, I wish I, you know, so I was like, oh, maybe we'll do that another time. So my judgment is off. So I'm saying that because I don't know. I don't know why things connect with other people, but I do know, and I've tried to lean into, like, something that I make sure it's connected with me so that when I share it, it can be true. And like, hey, this song's helped. I don't know if it's going to help you at all. I was going through this and this and this. And, yeah, you know, this helped give me a voice and just keep my heart open to God in the middle of it. And then after that, if someone sings it, it's amazing. If someone doesn't, I'm a little bummed at times because I'm like, man, that song's helped me so much. I wonder why it hasn't. But that's okay too. I think that's part of creativity.
This August in Premier Christianity magazine, we dive into justice, music, and football. Lawyer Janice Machemi talks about campaigning for the powerless, worship leader Pat Barrett on Christian music's big comeback, and Premier League legend John Bostock, who leads Ballers in God. Subscribe for 12 months at $44.99 and receive a free copy of Inspired, the best-selling book by Simon Gilbo. Sign up at premierchristianity.com.
You said a moment ago that you're learning that sometimes we over-spiritualize and other things we under-spiritualize. And like you say, we can over-spiritualize, oh, well, you know, God must have breathed on that song because it had a million streams. And actually, that's not the case. What are the things that we under-spiritualize?
Yeah. I think we under-spiritualize preparation. You know, in a lot of spaces I'm in, there's a big moment. There's the prayer before you take, we elevate the stage and the platform and the, which I'm not saying there's not great, there's a huge responsibility there. There is. But there's also a huge responsibility the moments before it. Like, God's not seeing, I'm not saying that the stage is less holy. I'm saying the ground before the stage is as holy to God. And I think it's really profound when Jesus, I think it's in Matthew, but it's during the Sermon on the Mount, it says Jesus stood on level ground, which I thought was also always like a fascinating little detail. Jesus seems to have like taught often from a very like we're in like level place, reachable, touchable. You know, I think there's an importance to that we recognize, like, you know, we had these highlight moments in our life that are really few and far between. And the invitation of the kingdom is to find miraculous contentment and purpose in all of it, because Jesus participated in all of it. Jesus knows, friend Jason Upton used to say this a bunch, Jesus knows what it feels like to be a 13-year-old. Jesus knew what it felt like to be 7. He hit every stage of adolescence, and there's not something that he didn't participate in. If God's willing to participate in it, I think we should too, with our whole heart. And then all of a sudden it allows all of it to feel miraculous and not just some of it. And it doesn't mean that every day is pleasant, but it changes your perspective if you realize like how miraculous it is that you're even here, that it was you, you know, in the lineage of your family, that it was you, that we're being like, you can't even make your heart beat next. Your breathing is involuntary. Like, so much of it is a gift. All of it is a gift anyways. And I think to see it as less than that is to belittle the giver. And what a beautiful thing when you wake up, if you can wake up and be like, oh, I know I'm eating breakfast with my kids right now, but God loves this. And tonight I'm going to be leading worship at big church day out, you know, with a lot of people. And God loves that. Does he love that more than this? No. No, he loves all of it. He loves the moments leading up to it. He loves the thing itself. And then he loves the moments after it. And so I think when we see it all like that, even our songs start to change a little bit.
Yeah.
And what we consider as our highest aim in life, all of a sudden you realize like, if he's everywhere, that kind of changes everything.
Yeah. It leads to you writing songs about moving house.
Exactly.
Yeah, God cares about that house move. And that's a totally legitimate inspiration for a worship song, just as much as anything else, I suppose.
Yeah.
What about those moments where it's been hard to worship? I don't know if you've had those moments in life.
Oh, but so much.
What's kind of brought you, what's brought you through those moments?
I think when worship is a choice, in a similar way that like, you know, marriage is a choice every day, you know, there's extreme. I think that's when it matters most, always matters. I think those are the times when, you know, it's not natural. It requires something. And I have, you know, per the instruction of the Psalms, I have given myself permission to be my unfiltered version before God when it comes to things in my life that I don't understand, or that I wish were different, or I wish I wasn't going through, or the pain that I feel, or the grief that I feel, or the disappointment, whatever. Like, every emotion is fair game. And I've decided that when I feel that way, when I feel the opposite of wanting to worship, I tell him. And all of a sudden, the one thing that would be like prime territory for the enemy to just build a wedge or a gap in that relationship. All of a sudden, even the painful things and the things I wish I wasn't feeling are used as a road to communion as well. And all of a sudden, when I started doing that, I just realized, like, oh, God's in the hard stuff too. He's not just in the easy stuff. He's not just in it when it goes great. He's in it when it bombs. The event didn't go well. You know, if the interview doesn't go well, if that publication doesn't have as much read, the numbers are changed. Yeah, you get to that. It doesn't mean he's not in it. It doesn't mean he doesn't care about it. And it allows me to detach outcome-based faith. And it allows me to be present with God in the middle of whatever I'm feeling. And when that happens, all of a sudden, it feels miraculous again. Like, don't miss the Lord in your sadness. And don't miss him in the grief. Don't miss him when everything's going great and you get the job. Don't miss him when you lose the job. Don't miss him in the payoff. And don't miss him in the layoff or whatever it is. Like, I'm writing a song right now. So I'm like, if he's in all of it, it allows you, like, that's absolute permission not to fake some emotion in worship. God's not asking for that. He's asking for continued communion in the middle of everything we experience. And that's a choice for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And a hard one, you know, at times.
But I think so many people, everyone can relate to that. No one's immune from those hard times. And I think about those songs that do often travel, some of the famous ones, they have emerged out of worship leaders going through incredibly difficult moments in their life, in their family life. And out of that has come a song which has been universal that everyone can sing.
Yeah.
I think of, you know, there's famous examples, like you mentioned earlier, Matt and Beth Redman suffering miscarriage after miscarriage,
right.
and a song like Blessed Be Your Name, which such a huge song, but it's like everyone can sing that because everyone has had those hard moments, and they, like you say, they're choosing to worship in those really difficult moments.
Yeah, so inspiring. That's when we need it the most, I think. That's when it, on the days when it doesn't come easy, and you're not naturally your most presentable self, you feel. And not just feelings, like life hits hard. Like when life hit, I mean, you don't have to look far to see everyone's story is very, very different. And in the middle of things that seem unbelievably cruel, the promise is that God can use it. Even when it doesn't feel like that. And I think the message of faith and the message of Jesus, it's like the most, there's nothing more relevant to the world right now. There's no message more needed or important. And sometimes I think we overlook how profound, not just broadly, like we need Jesus. Like, does Jesus have something to say about violence towards one another? Oh yeah, he does. Does Jesus have something to say with our charitable goodness towards each other? Oh yes, he does. Does Jesus have things to say about grief and loss? Oh yes, he does. Does Jesus have something to say about government? And as someone who lived his life during an occupied land by the Romans, does Jesus have something to say about that? Oh yes, he does. Do you have to look very far in our world to see a very easy example? No, you don't. So I think I get the chills thinking about things. It's not just songs. The songs are the expression of a kingdom that, if you allow it, it will completely change every paradigm in your life. And, you know, the songs that come from that, I always love that, of course. However, the communion that comes from that, those experiences, are the far greater treasure to me. And I'm going to keep writing songs my whole life, but I don't want to write songs and miss like the communion along the way in the real life that those songs come from. And that's why, like, you say, use those examples of Matt and Beth and the songs that come from moments like that, that have a chance to like give someone else language for their loss. And oh my gosh, it feels like the gift of hospitality. They like set a table for us and allowed to, you know, there's an offering to God in that, but then it's also, there's an encouragement to other people in the middle of it. I think when those are so connected, music like this is at its best.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, as I mentioned, you're on your way very soon over the pond, as we say, to Big Church Festival. Now you travel a lot, and I've been lucky enough to go to the US on a few occasions, and I've witnessed some beautiful things in US culture and US kind of Christian culture. I think
Chick-fil-A, is that what you're talking about?
Chick-fil-A is a big one. That's huge. And yet, why is it that every time I try to go Chick-fil-A, it's going on Sunday and I forget?
Join the battle. It's a struggle. Struggle's real.
The struggle is real. But no, I mean, in all seriousness, I think I love the sense of kind of optimism and we can do anything in the American culture. Us Brits can be quite cynical. And I think there's something about the American dream of go for it. And especially for Christians, of like, God is with us. Let's go. Let's do this. And the reason I bring this up is I always like to ask Americans, what have you noticed as you've traveled to other cultures, met Christians in other nations, whether it's the UK or elsewhere, that you think, wow, there's a beautiful part of the church in that nation or that culture, which is perhaps different to US culture, that you found inspiring or challenging?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what I tell people all the time. Like when I go over there, I'm like, when I go to England and get a chance to play music, I walk away going like, I needed this for me. Like,
really? Why is that?
I think for, in a lot of ways, so my unique geography in the U.S., I'm in the Bible Belt, you're in the cultural South, and there's a, you know, there's a social aspect to religion here that's, you get a big social payoff for just like being there, because that's what you do. No, when I go to England and I'm in a space like that, no one's there because that's what you do. Like no one does that. You're there because you want to be there. You're there because you've decided to be there. You're not there because, oh, this is just what we all do on a Sunday, whether you believe it or care or not. Like, so I feel like I run into a sincerity in England that is highly infectious to me in the best way. And it just, when you're in a room of people who want to be there and don't feel like I have to be here because that's what God probably wants, you know, like I'm not dragging their feet, or not that everyone always just, you know, everyone can have their moments, but yeah, it does. It's like a faith injection to me or something. Like I just come back like, man, I want faith to feel like that. I don't want like heartless duty to be a part of this. I want there to be just like a, it's very countercultural. You have to go out of your way, you know?
Yeah.
And I love that. There's a beauty in that I tell all my friends about all the time. And anyone that's ever gone over there, they feel that as well.
That's great to hear.
And Nando's everywhere.
Well, I mean, Nando's versus Chick-fil-A, that's the real conversation, isn't it?
I mean, is it?
Fantastic. Other chicken shops are available. You said you're going to be writing songs for the rest of your life. I don't know if you're going to be touring for the rest of your life, but I know touring,
oh, yeah.
Touring has its drawbacks as well, doesn't it? And I don't know if people are always even aware of that. I spoke to a Christian radio DJ in the US recently who said he, quote, feels sorry for artists who tour. He said it's actually a brutal life. And he even went as far as saying it's understandable how many touring artists, CCM or not, develop addictions. Now, I don't know if you can give any insight into that, because I think a lot of people will be thinking, what's the problem here? You get to lead worship in a different city every night. You get to see God work all over the world.
Yeah.
What's the problem? Why is touring tough? Or is touring tough?
Well, if you're 22 and you don't have a family, you know, daddy ain't 22 no more. So I think they're very, it's like anything else. When like someone's job isn't conducive to the life that they're in, like, I have three kids. My oldest is 13. My youngest is 8. Touring is not going to be a huge part of my life all year round. And there are years where my wife Meg and I, like, we'll be like, oh, that was too much. We didn't leave margin. And we felt it. And it was our fault. We said yes to too many things. And I think there's, you know, what's the problem with touring? I don't know if there's a problem with touring. I think you know when anytime you're away from your kids, it's hard, you know? You miss the people that you love. But I think when you're out there and you're lonely, and then all of a sudden you're performing on a stage, and then you don't have a sense of real rootedness or community, or you're surrounded by all yes people that think everything you do is awesome. You know, I don't know if that's conducive to a really healthy life, if iron's not sharpening iron.
And again, just for those of us who don't experience this, it just help us understand, but I can imagine it might be slightly strange to be on a large stage in front of potentially tens of thousands of people for 2 hours and then to walk off it. Because you go from that to like nothing. Like, that must be pretty strange. And again, I guess spiritually there's stuff to kind of work through there. I mean, how do you work through that and not get carried away with kind of hype or celebrity or excitement? And, you know, like, you must have learned over time things that are helpful, not helpful for you in that context.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, again, I'm surrounded by people that don't think everything I do is awesome. And I don't think that either. So it's quite easy for me to like get off stage and just be like, man, I could have done that better. You hear that bad note? Like, I think there's like a, don't take yourself too seriously, but be serious about what you do. You know, we've heard that stuff all the time. I also think there's, you know, I had to make a conscious choice early on. This is a personal story. I was, Good Father had been written and wasn't out. Like, it was just, I felt like I was praying one morning. And I just heard in my heart, don't believe the hype. It's like, waking up in my life, like, there's no hype. So there's nothing that's like, you know, easy. But I wrote it on my hand, don't believe the hype. I felt like it was like, there's going to come a time. There may come a time when everyone's going to tell you everything you've wanted to hear. You're going to get all the approval you thought you'd ever get, all the attention, more attention than you ever thought you'd get. And in that moment, you're going to wonder, do I believe this? Is this what I've been looking for? And don't do it. And I literally wrote that on my hand. And a few months later, first time in my life I've ever written a song that seemed like it started to spread. Usually been the opposite in my life. And I had this still small voice. Hey, just don't believe the hype. Just write your songs and put them out. It didn't feel like thus saith the Lord. But when I look back, I'm like, I think that was, there was a merciful warning in it. And when I read the scriptures too, I see the same thing. Like, when the day comes and you're presented with the opportunity to have everything you've ever wanted, will you realize that that was your treasure, or that it was somewhere else? When Israel left, the Israelites moved into the promised land, the warning was that, hey, when you lived in captivity for a long time, when you reach this land and you live in houses that you did not build and you eat from vines that you did not plant, you may think to yourself, my own strength and my own wisdom gave this to me. And then the next part is, but who a man gives you the ability to create wealth? Who even gave you the ability to do any of the things that you ever did? And so I think there's something important in there. Like, you do something awesome and you get like attention and, you know, it's like that you take the crown that people give you and you give it back to Jesus. Like, this isn't mine. This is someone else's. And if you continually redirect in an honest way, I don't mean like in a false humility, like, guys, stop. You type way. There's like a, all right, anything. I remember Matt Redman say one time, he got done leading worship and he says, anything good that happened, God, that was because of you. And he just gives it back.
Yeah.
I didn't need any of that attention. I don't need someone to tell me I'm so awesome. And then when you don't need it, it can just be a gift and be fun and not something that fuels the most unhealthy parts of touring or personal choices or the way we medicate from the loneliness, you know. Yeah, I mean, speaking of the touring stuff, I'm doing a lot of touring this fall and spring. I think there's always the chance to not only just write it, but to share it. I always get so fired up about it. It's a big church. I'm like, I'm so excited for big church. I've had so many of like my favorite memories leading worship anywhere, like there. So always sweet to be back. And to play not just, you know, the songs I've kind of always played, but some new songs too. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to having you here in the UK, Pat. And I will be down there. I'll be down there worshiping with you and thousands of others. So bring it on. You can see Pat Barrett at the upcoming Big Church Festival at Wiston House in Sussex. Do check out his music as well in all the usual places on social media, including the new single. But Pat Barrett, thank you so much for joining us on the show. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.